Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang, offering ourselves at the lotus feet of Bhagwan. We begin this episode of Vahini Satsang, and along with me is Sai Prakash, the co-host of this program. Since we started this series, we have been dwelling on the writings of Bhagwan. All the different series of articles that Swami wrote way back in the 50s and 60s through the 70s and 80s, and which later were compiled into a series of books called the Vahini series. And we have been discussing Prema Vahini. We discussed the third segment of chapter 16 in the previous episode of Vahini Satsang. So today, praying to Bhagwan that he guides us and he gives us the understanding to assimilate what he has written, we take on from the fourth segment of chapter 16. So let's hear segment 16.4 and then we will discuss.
జిహ్వకు, కంటికి, చెవికి మానవుడు చపలత్వమును నేర్పుచున్నాడు. దీనికి విరుద్ధమైన అభ్యాసమునందు చిత్తము లగ్నము చేయవలెను. మంచి విషయముల వైపు మనస్సును మరల్చవలెను. బాల్యం నుండి ఏకాగ్రతతో మంచి సంస్కారములు చేయుచుండవలెను. అనుక్షణము కలుగు సంస్కారములు మంచివి అవునా కాదా అని పరిశీలించుకొనవలెను. మానవుడు చేయు ప్రతి పనియు ఉలియై మానవ జీవితమును శిలకు ఆకృతిని దిద్దును. ఆ ఉలిని దారితప్పి ప్రయోగింతుమా, హానికరమే కాక జీవిత శిలయు చెడిపోవును. అందువలన స్వల్పాతి స్వల్ప విషయమందు సైతం మెలకువతో సంచరించవలను.
మ్యాన్ హాస్ టాట్ ది ఐ, ది ఇయర్ అండ్ ది టంగ్ ది లగ్జరీ ఆఫ్ కాన్స్టెంట్ నోబిలిటీ. నౌ ది మైండ్ హాస్ టు ఎంగేజ్ ఇన్ ఆపోజిట్ టెండెన్సీస్. The mind has to be turned towards the good. Right from childhood, such activities need to be done with one-pointed concentration. All activities have to be examined constantly from this standpoint. Each such deed is the stroke of a chisel by which the rock of human personality is being shaped. A wrong stroke will not only be harmful, but also completely ruin this rock. Therefore, even the tiniest of acts has to be done with great care.
So, what Bhagwan is saying here is about the luxury of constant novelty. Isn't that something interesting, Sai Prakash? Can you relate to what is happening in today's times?
Absolutely. I mean, we want something different every moment.
Yes.
And possibly one of, since we are into production of videos, etc., you would, what would be the ending? What would be the twist? Hmm. What would be the novelty in that?
Hmm.
In a sense, going a little bit tangential from what we are actually talking about, there is this quote, they say, for a good story, for a good film, it has to have a very interesting starting, beginning, a very interesting ending, and a twist.
Yeah.
So, that twist is what we all, whole life is about, and we are so busy feeding our senses with novelty.
In fact, but, you know, I mean, that is what a good story is all about. But, don't you think in the recent times, the pace with which we want these twists,
correct,
the pace with which we want these changes to happen has gone on to a differently altogether accelerated insane levels.
Absolutely.
Because the other day I was reading the statistics that the number of times we touch, swipe and tap our phone every day is a staggering 2,617 times.
Each person?
Each person.
Oh my God, I wish I could count that tomorrow.
You know, in fact, this might be something interesting. I don't know if you read about it. When I read it also, sort of... was a huge learning, and for me as well, as it vindicated what I always believed.
Mm-hmm.
I read this article which was written by Justin Rosenstein.
Okay.
Justin Rosenstein is a Facebook engineer. He's the one who actually is one of those awesome software guys who created that awesome feature called the like button.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he instantly became a tech hero.
Okay.
When he stumbled on this like button. And incidentally, when he was with Google, he created GChat.
Okay.
So he is someone who has really brought in all these different features, which in today's parlance is called part of attention economy.
Okay.
Basically, the advertising industry is completely driven by this thing called attention economy.
Mm-hmm.
And this person, now he says that what I have created, I have realized, is nothing but bright dings of pseudo pleasure.
Oh my God.
The like. And because he does not like what he has created. The one who created the like button on Facebook doesn't.
Has he taken up Buddhism or something?
No. It is just the reality of what is happening, the way the world is headed. Because he says, in today's time, everyone is distracted all the time.
Right.
And he says, what has today happened is, because of the smartphone use, it is not just addictive. It is continuous partial attention. And that is actually contributing to decreased cognitive abilities. It is absolutely so harmful for the coming generation. In fact, he's not the only one in the Silicon Valley. I mean, if you see, there are so many other people. Another gentleman, Harris, a Google techie. And similarly, there are many actually in that article which I read who feel that a lot more needs to be done now to wean people away from the dangers of the attention economy. And in fact, he's now started a non-governmental organization actually, which is into helping people to not get addicted to social media, to not get addicted to gadgets. In fact, he, along with so many other techies in the Silicon Valley, they don't send their kids to schools which are normal. They send their kids to schools where gadgets are banned.
My God.
So where iPhones, iPads, they're banned. They want to, because, you know, the recent studies also have shown that, you know, if kids are away from the gadgets till their age 12 or more, then definitely their cognitive abilities, their the ability to focus, the ability to control their mind is much greater. And I feel, you know, that is something that I feel that is something that Bhagwan is hinting here, because, you know, we are constantly teaching the eye, the ear and the tongue this constant novelty, and Swami is telling mind has to be engaged in opposite tendencies.
Correct.
Because that is not what will help us to grow spiritually, isn't it?
In fact, somebody was giving a very interesting analogy. And so they asked, in the other yugas, like Treta Yuga, Dwapar Yuga, everywhere you had demons. You had Ravana, you had Kamsa, you had Duryodhana. And so what was the role of the demon? A demon was very powerful. And the demon was always kind of leading you away from your spiritual goal.
I'm getting it. Yeah, go on.
And the demon was teaching you how to be very worldly and leading example of...
Be selfish, be narcissist.
Exactly. So... what is the demon in this Kali age? So, in a sense, it's technology. And technology itself has become the demon. And totally unawares of that, we are taking. But there's something very interesting, a personal incident which comes to mind. I think it was in 2001. So Swami had called me and a few others. Swami had just called us, and we in the interview room, Swami was speaking, and I think Professor Venkatraman and the Vice Chancellor and few others were there as well. So Swami was asking them, what is technology? And so some of them were saying, Swami, different answers. And Swami saying, no, wrong answer, wrong answer. And then Swami came to my chance came. He asked, I said, Swami, you have said in your discourses, technology is trick knowledge. So it tricks you. Swami said, hey, you are repeating what I said. What do you understand of technology? So at that time, I didn't, everybody was silent. Obviously, everyone else in the room was wiser than me because they wanted to hear what is Swami's answer. And I blurted out this answer. But Swami gave a very simple definition. He said, any action or anything that is supposed to be done by a human being, if it is done by machines, that is technology.
Yes.
He said, anything that is supposed to be done by human beings, if it's done by machines, so that is technology.
Yeah.
And you know, can understand it at several levels.
That is, I mean, very significant. I mean, the way Swami has played the word technology as trichnology, I think that is what is happening. I mean, all the time we are... technology is tripping us, tricking us, and we are falling actually. If you see, I mean, at the same time, Swami has also set up the computer labs in the institute. He has modernized our system. The hospital uses so much of technology to help people. I mean, it is not to abhor technology, but I think, as Bhagwan always mentioned, there is limits to everything. And there is a time, there is a place, there is a way to use this so that you are not enslaved by them. Just like the whole world is given to you, Swami says, you can enjoy the world, but ensure that, you know, you are not, the world is not enjoying you. I think it's it is something of in that perspective that we should understand this, isn't it?
This is very interesting because I was seeing this talk by Swami Sarvapriyananda. He was speaking to the IIT students in Kanpur.
Ramakrishna Mission, right?
From the Ramakrishna Mission. And I would really urge all our listeners to even go to YouTube and see the series of 2-3 talks. It's really brilliant and very coherently and very beautifully analyzes. Now, there in one of the talks, so he's talking about the same thing. Suppose we say, Swami says that we are teaching the senses to get attached to novelty all the time. But what we ought to be doing is turn the mind in the opposite direction.
Yes.
Now, why are we trying to turn the mind in the opposite direction? What is important about doing that? And why we should not go along with the senses? So, in that talk, he has given several analogies. And he starts off with something called the Shreyas and Prayas.
Yes.
So Shreyas and Prayas is Shreyas is what you like to do, but Prayas is what you want to do, what you eventually want, or the spiritual goal.
Okay.
It's the higher goal or the higher ambition.
That is Shreyas, right?
Shreyas.
Yes.
And prayers is what is pleasing.
What is pleasing.
What is pleasing, yes.
Yeah.
So whatever is pleasing to you, you want to do that.
Yeah.
So he asks in the class, very nicely he asks, so how many of you, if given a choice and if everything is fine and all that, want to get up at 4 in the morning, do meditation or go for jogging or just take a walk and then read, draw and, you know, meditate and all that. 90% of the class lifted their arms. And then he says, how many of you love to sleep at 4 in the morning when it's cold, winter, pull that rajai and then, you know, cuddle back into your bed. The same 90% lifted the hands.
Oh.
I mean, 90% of the class lifted. He says, so there is a difference between what you like and what you would want to do.
What you want to do.
So, then he says, how, you know, in this chapter of the Prema Vahini, Swami has been speaking about samskaras.
Absolutely.
So what drives our actions? What drives our actions, if you look at it, more than 60 to 70% is driven by samskaras.
Yes.
What you accumulate.
Yes.
And last chapter, last week, Swami spoke about death. And he said the kind of, you know, a feeling that you retain when you're dying.
Strong that is impressions.
The impression. That is reflective of the way you have led your life. And so everything is on an impulse. Now, for example, you are, you get angry. And he said, oh my God, again I lost my temper. You don't want to lose it. Obviously, nobody wants to lose temper, but it's not in your control because that's because of your samskaras. So, in that talk, Sarvapriyananda, Swami Sarvapriyananda very beautifully explains. He says, you are driven by your samskaras. Your every action is driven by your samskaras. In fact, here I think in the second paragraph, mind has to be turned turned towards the good right from childhood. Such activities need to be done with one-pointed concentration.
Yes.
All activities have to be examined constantly from this standpoint. Now, what is this standpoint? And Swami says, this standpoint, if you look at what is your spiritual goal, what do you want to achieve? So, in that sense, if you look at it, on one side, you're driven by samskaras to do your action. And on the fulfillment of your action, you realize, oh my God, I should not have done that. But the action is already done. So where is the solution? So then he gives two shlokas from the Bhagavad Gita, which are very, very relevant. He says, chapter 3, shloka number 33 and 34. He says, Sadrisham chestate swasya prakritir jnanamanapi prakritim yanti bhutani nigraha kim karishyati. That means, he says, everybody is driven by their samskaras, by the accumulated past. And so what can control do? Means you are saying control your senses. What can control do? Because you are always being driven.
Yes.
You are driven by what you have accumulated. So what can control do? And he says, Krishna gives the answer to this question, this predicament. In the next shloka, he says, Indriyas yarte ragadvesha vyavastitau tayor na vasham agachet tau hyasya paripannitau. Pantitau. So, Pantinau, sorry. He says, don't be affected by likes and dislikes. So, for example, before the manifestation of your thought, word and deed of any particular, anger, suppose you're getting angry. Now, why do you get angry? Because you don't like something. You don't like something, so you get angry against it. But if you start conditioning your mind in such a way that you go beyond likes and dislikes. Of course, it's very easy to say that.
I know.
But he says that is this standpoint which Swami is talking about. If you are able to lead your mind, all activities have to be examined constantly from this standpoint, Swami says.
Yes.
So what is that this standpoint is? Again, very interestingly, the definition of whom Swami calls is Bhakta. He says, who is it? Who is my devotee? Anybody who accepts, who, you know, kind of gets equanimity of joy and sorrow, happiness and pain. So such a person is devoted to me. So what it all comes down to is, between the impulse to have a thought, word or deed, and the manifestation of that thought, word and deed, you have a choice.
Yes.
A small window of choice.
Yes.
Which is either to be driven by raga dvesha or to be detached from it.
Yes. Wow, I think that is very beautiful. In fact, you remember, Sai Prakash, sometime back when we had Bhagya sir, he mentioned about 7 seconds.
Absolutely. And Swami has told that. So he says, in that small window. So now, for example, coming back to the first paragraph, he says, man has taught the eye, the ear and the tongue the luxury of constant novelty. So what are we trying to do? when you see something different, when you see something new, what is the ripple effect? What does it affect you? Like, okay, you see a beautiful flower and you say, wow, what a beautiful flower. I'm sure it smells very good. Let me pluck it and take it. Or how wonderful it is. See, either ways, there is an association with that flower. And so in a sense, in that second, or in that moment when you are thinking about the flower, your thought is not on the goal that you want to achieve.
But true. But I think one simple way of doing this, which Swami says here, the mind has to be turned towards the good. That's what Swami says here. And then he says, like, you know, right from childhood, you such activities need to be done with one pointed concentration. So what we can do is the moment, you know, as you said, that gap between the thought, word and the action, as they say, you should always not react but respond. I think take those 7 seconds and then respond.
Absolutely.
And so what we can do is see how I can make it good.
Mm-hmm.
For example, just today I was reading about this law of garbage truck. Have you heard about the law of garbage
truck? No. What's that?
But sometime back we had published this on Heart to Heart. Basically, there is this person now who is going in his car.
Okay.
And his driver was someone who was really driving well. And then suddenly there is this truck that comes to their side, and it actually sort of almost hitting them. And that person, that the truck driver looks at this car driver, and you know, he angrily shouts, and you know, he pours all those adjectives that you don't want to hear, and he leaves. But actually it is his mistake.
Okay
And this owner is very infuriated, owner of the car, and he looks at the driver, and the driver is really calm. The driver is really smiling, and you know, he heard everything, he all that the person gave, he accepted as as a prasadam. And he just smiled and he wished him well and he let him go. And the owner said, how can you be like this? You know, you know, the way that person abuses, first of all, we have not done any mistake. You should have given it back, you know, all that. And then this driver says, sir, have you heard about the law of garbage truck? So the owner says, what is that? He says, see, there are a lot of people in the world who are all the time carrying a lot of garbage with them.
Okay.
Because of, you know, circumstances in their life, their frustrations or whatever, their samskaras or whatever, you know. So anything little also irritates them, disturbs them.
Okay.
And whenever that happens, all that luggage that they're carrying, all that garbage that they're carrying, they dump it on someone else. Because that is the way they sort of can handle themselves. So he says, so when they just give that, you know, it is our job to ensure that we don't collect that garbage with us. You know, you just let it go. You don't want, because if you collect all that garbage, then again you'll have to offload that garbage on someone else. So he says, you know, this is the law of garbage. But I mean, that's what it is. See, at that point in time, in those 7 seconds, you know, when that person was saying, I can always just be quiet and you know, because an argument will only lead to more arguments and more bad feelings and perhaps more bad karma.
So in that same talk, what he says is, he gives a very nice story. He says, this is from a Buddhist monk. A disciple comes to him and he says, now how do I change my thoughts, or how do I change my actions and my words? And so he says, I'm very distracted when I try to meditate. So the guru gives him a bowl. And he gives him two sets of stones, pebbles. One white pebbles, one black pebbles. And he says, when you get a negative thought, you put a black pebble in the bowl. And when you get a positive thought, you put a white pebble in the bowl. So he started seeing, initially there were many black pebbles. Over the course of a few months and a year and year and a half, the pebbles all started becoming white.
Oh, wow.
So he says, by gradual, again, in Bhagavad Gita, he says, how do you control the mind?
Hmm.
He says, vayor iva sudushkaram. It is more difficult than trying to control the wind.
Hmm.
And Krishna says, yes, it is difficult. Abhyasena tu kaunteya vairagyena cha grihyati. He says, with practice you can do that.
Hmm.
See, there are two things. Now he says, the mind has to be turned in the opposite direction.
Hmm.
First of all, why it should be turned.
Hmm.
And secondly, how to turn it.
Hmm.
Now, he says, why it should be turned is because if it is not turned and if the mind goes along with the senses, like how Swami gives that example of horses,
yes,
are the senses and the mind is the reins that control. Mm. If the mind goes along with the senses,
mm,
then the mind starts identifying yourself with the senses, mm, and what is external.
Yes.
So you are not able to direct your vision towards who you really are, mm, or towards within yourself. Mm. So that is why it should be controlled. And Swami gives that standard example, a very beautiful example of the lake.
Yes.
So he says the mind is like the lake with several ripples and muddy water and, you know, all that. So when you have such dirty water and, you know, fast flowing water, there is no stability and it is not transparent. It's, yes, very opaque and you cannot see your reflection in it.
Hmm.
You cannot see your reflection.
Correct.
So, but when the mind is very clean,
yes,
and very static and very
still,
clear and still, then when you look into it, you can see your own reflection.
Mm.
So in order to see who you really are, to know, mm, who you really are, you have to have a stable mind and, mm, a very clean mind.
Mm. Wow. In fact, you know, as we are talking about this and Swami is saying that, you know, this is something that children,
mm-hmm,
have to be engaged in. Children have to be groomed,
mm,
in this direction.
Mm.
And, you know, I was just thinking of the routine here.
Correct.
In Prashanthi Nilayam, if you see, if you see here, students do so many activities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you see the school hostel, for example, because some time back, I was talking to a group of school students.
Mm-hmm.
And so this boy, Shivam, at that point in time, he was in 12th standard.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that it is really so amazing that here, what used to take me 6 hours to, mm-hmm, complete my homework when I was in Mumbai.
Okay.
For his 10th class, 10th grade. I do that here,
mm,
in just 2 hours. He says, and plus I do so many other things.
Mm.
So that's what Dr. Sailesh Srivastava, you know, who, mm, who's of course a very, very revered teacher in the school. Mm. So what he was saying is here,
mm,
what we are achieving is the art of education for life. So education for life is different from education from living from a perspective of education. You probably can get an education for living. You can have a job. You can probably make a living with a distracted mind. But education for life is all about a disciplined mind. So today, I mean, most of the kids are distracted. I mean, mm, thanks to the way the world is going. So with that, probably you'll get a great job. You know, you probably will be making a lot of money. Probably you're doing multitasking and all that.
Mm.
But that is education only for living.
Mm.
But what Swami is referring to here is education for life. And that comes only with a disciplined mind. And,
mm,
he says how, because of the students being brought up in an environment where they are asked to concentrate,
mm-hmm,
that really sharpens their cognitive abilities, that sharpens their focus. So their productivity is so much higher. In fact, sometime back when you had the school being hailed as the top 10 schools,
mm-hmm,
in the country, you know, when you looked at that list,
mm,
you know, the other schools were, mm, all in the metros.
Mm.
If you talk to the students of those schools, once they come to 9th, 10th, they do nothing else. You know, only studies. I mean, mm, they'll be studying perhaps 6, mm, to 8 to 10 hours per day.
Mm.
And here, the study hours are always limited to 2 hours. Perhaps during examination time, you know, you will somehow, students will snatch a little time from during the intervals or snatch during the lunch hour and probably get another 1 hour of study more, but that's all you get, you know. Mm. But still you achieve this fantastic results, academic results. I think that is, to me, a very practical example of what Swami is talking, isn't it?
Absolutely. In fact, very interestingly, one of the videos, 3 sessions, mm-hmm. Swami is saying, I am not speaking to you all.
Oh.
So all the students are sitting. Mm. And Swami is saying, when I said sit silently, you all are sitting silently. You are not running and jumping. But I am talking to your mind.
Mind.
Wow. Your mind is roaming in the bazaar. It's roaming elsewhere.
Mm.
He says, it's very easy for a body to sit, you know, you are sitting in one place.
Mm.
So what?
Mm.
A body is meaningless. Mm. There's no...
That doesn't mean you're quiet.
Yeah, that doesn't mean you're quiet. He said, your mind has to be silent.
Mm.
If your mind is silent, then you will... a very interesting aside, in fact, Swami, I believe, said, one of those days when one of the school teachers caught the ears of 4 of the school students and took them to Swami and said, Swami, these are the boys.
Mm.
And Swami said, what did they do? Mm. Swami, you have to punish them.
Mm.
Swami said, for what?
Mm.
No, Swami, they have done something very wrong.
Mm.
Swami said, what did they do? He said, Swami, you were giving a discourse and they were sleeping.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Mm. And I caught them because they were sleeping.
Mm.
And Swami said, what is wrong?
Oh my God.
So the teacher was amazed and everybody around were also amazed.
Mm.
And they said, so what is Swami saying?
Mm. Mm.
And then Swami said, that is the best way to listen to my discourse.
Oh. Swami said that?
Ah. He said, because when you're in that half state of awake and asleep, your senses are not distracting you.
Mm-hmm.
Your mind is calm.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever I speak directly goes into your subconscious.
Oh, wow. Mm.
And I believe Swami specifically said that students should be made to listen to my discourses just before they sleep.
Oh, okay. So that's what...
That's what goes into their subconscious.
Oh, wow.
And in fact, for listeners, it would be really interesting... A really interesting exercise to do because I think in our radio's eyesight, we have several discourses where we have only Swami's voice. We have removed the translator's voice.
Mm.
And whether you understand Telugu or you don't understand Telugu, doesn't matter.
Yes.
If you just put on Swami's discourse and as you're listening to it, if you just fall asleep, I think that inspiration, that message which Swami is giving directly goes into our subconscious.
Wow.
And it is something which we'll have to try to do because the moment we open our eyes, we are distracted with something. So you're listening to Swami's discourse just let me check WhatsApp.
I know, and also I think, you know, if not anything else, you'll sleep well.
You'll sleep well, absolutely.
And that's a huge thing. Sometimes people cannot sleep.
Yeah, yeah. No, because
I've been speaking to many people and I've been telling them that it would be nice to change your schedule to, you know, early morning schedules, you know, sleep early in the night and get up early in the morning and you'll be more productive and all that because that's how the hostel schedule was. You know, as we get through life, you know, with time, most of us get into that schedule of working late in the nights and getting up late in the morning, especially in the metros, and but if you see what Swami has always advised,
correct,
is that you should get up early in the morning, you know. But people say it just can't happen, you know, because I just can't sleep.
That's because you just have not set it as your priority, because it's not your priority.
Yeah.
You want to do it, you would love to do it, but you're not doing it.
You're not doing it. But I think at least if you put on the discourse stream, maybe you know you will just calm your mind. And ensure that you don't get too distracted and you'll sleep. The other, you know, the important thing as you are mentioning this is when we're talking about children and the distraction that is happening in the world today. Other day I was reading how, you know, one of the major concerns today, especially when it comes to children, is this ADHD disorder. You know, I think perhaps you've heard about this, the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. There were 2 million children in the US who were diagnosed with this.
My goodness.
Between 2003 and 2012. So, I mean, most children are diagnosed by their age 6, and, you know, by their age 4, they have this serious ability that they are not able to concentrate. So, and that is something which is very, very alarming, because, you know, their cognitive capacities really decline. And most of these kids, they have to start medication right from their early age, by the time they are 4 or 6, and through their entire teen years they have to take the medication, and after that, you know, the medication continues. And what they have found is one solution to this,
okay,
to this distraction disorder is meditation. And, you know, we know in how in the Satya Sai system of education, Swami always mentioned about silent sitting, and in the EHV, in the Balvikas, you always have this practice of silent sitting and bit of meditation, Jyoti meditation, whatever. And we have that in our schools also. So now, you know, the world is waking up, just like the world is waking up to yoga. Now world is waking up that how this will help students to get over so many maladies, especially even their social behaviors. They have found that a meditation program has showed 24% better social behavior. Students were 24% less aggressive, and they perceived themselves 20% more social. I mean, I think these are, so what they are finding is, it is not something, if students come to the school and if they are asked to meditate, it is not something which will take time off from their academics, but this is what will help them become better in their academics, as what is happening in the higher secondary school here and many size schools elsewhere. But the most interesting finding is, what they are saying is, this is making them more altruistic. This is making them more connected with the world. This is improving their sense. They're not able to map it how, but they're saying this is helping children to become more compassionate.
Compassionate, right.
More compassionate.
Mm.
And I think, see, I mean, all these things, and especially whatever has come from our ancient rishis and what Bhagwan has been saying us, and I feel that's why the Satya Sai system of education, especially whatever is followed in the hostel here, this is, you know, directly laid down by Bhagwan, and we can really map everything that Swami is talking about, how to raise the next generation. Because in the students here, I mean, in the institutions here, students are not allowed mobile phones, isn't it? In the primary school or in the college years, I mean, it's very restricted access. Access is there, but it's very restricted, and that is so important, isn't it? I mean, the world is slowly waking up to that.
Right.
Silicon Valley techies are waking up to that.
People have to, I think, give money and go to resorts where they are not allowed to use their mobiles.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what is happening. I mean, there are resorts in Japan where you pay the money so that they can keep your phones.
In fact, see, here Swami is talking about one-pointed concentration.
Yes.
He says the mind has to be turned towards the good right from childhood. Such activities need to be done with one-pointed concentration, ekagrata. That is something which Swami has spoken about even in the initial chapters of Premavaini.
Yes.
And how concentration from that standpoint.
Yes.
So that concentration is driving you towards that goal. I had a very interesting, tangential thought. Obviously not ekagrata, but there is this condition where you have the savants, you know, people who have extraordinary abilities because of people who have seen the movie Rain Man. It's about this gentleman called Kim Peek, and so what they have this neurological, now we don't know whether to call it a disorder or ability. To say it, ability, of course, in a sense it's disorder, because it takes away several other functionality of their body. But this Kim Peek, for example, he is considered to be the the walking encyclopedia, the greatest walking encyclopedia on earth.
Oh, Oh my God.
So you just go and ask him any question, and he'll tell you what the answer is.
Oh my God.
Any question from any topic.
A walking Google.
Yes, he's a walking Google. And so he still continues to read books, and because that's what he does. And so his father, who is in the 80s, so that documentary they were asking him, he says, how much time does it take to read two pages of a book? Like when you open a book, you have two sides.
Yes.
So he says, it takes exactly 8 seconds.
Oh my God.
8 seconds, and once he has read something, there's no question of forgetting it.
Wow.
Extraordinary concentration, extraordinary ability.
My God.
The brain, the mind is so powerful that it gives him this extraordinary concentration. And there is this other savant who is Daniel Tammet. So he has this power to do amazing mathematical calculations. And yes, there are people who are very fast at doing mathematical calculations, and whiz kids, yes, and you know, people who have been given that special ability. But his is of a totally different level. And he flew all the way from Europe, I don't remember exactly where he's from, to the U.S., to participate in what is called the Pi Day. So we all know the mathematical Pi, and it has 3.164, and then the numbers go on and on and on. It's an endless number.
Yes.
So what he did was, he took, I think, a couple of weeks to look at that endless number and then reproduce it to the level of 22,500 numbers.
Oh my God.
So 3.164 and then 7, 8, whatever comes after that, 22,500 numbers after the decimal he was able to recount.
Oh my God.
And that took him something like 5.5 hours. 5.5 hours to reproduce these numbers. It's amazing. So then they ask him, how do you do it? From where do you get this amount of concentration? Like the whole topic came because of ekagrata and single-minded, single, you know, focused concentration.
Yes.
Of course, this is their, this is an ability that has been bestowed, and there are very few savants alive today. And there are people who can remember a lot of numbers. There are people who can remember the you know, mano, buddhi, chitta, ankara. If you look at it, mind, chitta aspect of it, which is memory. So he says that memory aspect is very strong in them. So they are able to recount. But there's also interesting thing when they ask him how you are able to remember these numbers. He associates forms. He sees them as forms.
Oh.
He sees them as light. He sees them as patterns.
Oh, wow.
He sees them as beings. So it is not that he sees them as numbers. He has an experience of those numbers.
Wow.
It's very interesting, the whole, if you search on YouTube, you'll come across these. Now, this is also called synesthesia.
I don't think he's having 2-strand DNA, some 12-strand DNA or 10-strand DNA.
Brilliant, brilliant. And so this condition is also called synesthesia, where they're able to associate form and texture and music and light and sound with numbers. So it's a different level of...
A different dimension.
And people are trying to actually cognize and see whether there is any kind of a logical ability that can be kind of brought. Now, the reason I'm talking about all this is also coming out of extreme concentration.
Yes.
This is also extreme concentration. And some of them have this ability to have this extreme concentration and reproduce results which normal people like us cannot you know, comprehend or reach that level. But what Swami is saying is that it is possible for everybody.
Yes.
What Swami is saying is that it is possible for everybody to focus and then concentrate and get the result of going beyond the distractions of the senses.
Yes.
So now that is something which is very, very interesting, because in a sense, there are people in the world who have these extraordinary abilities, who are able to produce this superhuman answers and results. But here he says this is in the grasp of everybody.
Yes. In fact, one very beautiful example of this is Swami Vivekananda, isn't it?
Mm.
I mean, he was someone who could just glance through the book and know the contents. And he was someone who could read a book in minutes.
Absolutely.
And that is only through the power of concentration, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It is the power of focus. It is the power of, as Bhagwan is saying, turning the mind towards the good.
Mm.
It is the power of sharpening the mind through the process of meditation.
Mm.
That is what Bhagwan is saying. I mean, Swami would want that every student develops that kind of a mental faculty through the process of Shreyas, as you mentioned.
Right.
Isn't it?
In fact, you know, here, the last paragraph he says, it's like a stroke of a chisel. And the human personality is being shaped.
Mm.
I mean, just imagine you're making this huge sculpture and then somebody chips off the nose. And you cannot really get it back. And he says, so every action, and this is something very, very inspiring. He says, therefore, even the tiniest of actions has to be done with great care.
Mm.
And here again in that same talk by Swami Sarva Priyananda, he gives a very beautiful perspective.
Mm-hmm.
He says, he writes on the board A and B.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, come on, one of you come and choose any one of them. So the person comes and tick marks opposite A.
Mm-hmm.
So he has selected A.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, yes, generally this is how we select.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose you have two things. You want to select, you select A.
Mm-hmm.
Now, or you circle A.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not complete in itself.
Mm-hmm.
The meaning decision, the word decision comes from the source of caesare or caesarean,
mm-hmm.
where it is to cut the other option.
Oh, okay. So select means you cut the other one.
It is not enough. It is not enough that you select one option.
Mm.
What is equally important is you cut the other option.
Wow. Hmm.
So when Swami says even the tiniest of actions has to be done with great care, and it has to be examined constantly from that standpoint.
Hmm.
See, the words are very beautiful.
Hmm.
Says it has to be examined from that standpoint. What is that standpoint?
Hmm.
So that standpoint of your Shreyas, of, you know, what is your ultimate goal?
Mm.
Is this action helping me towards that goal?
Mm.
And so, if it is not helping me, cut it.
Cut it.
Mm. Cut it.
Yes.
It is not helping me, so I am not going for it.
Yes.
So, if watching movie till 12 o'clock at night is not helping me get good rest, which is not helping me get a good day's work the next day, and which is not obviously helping me to understand who really are my spiritual goals, cut it.
Yes. Yes.
If you do not cut it, if you keep the option open, then you are always tending to slide back.
Mm. Wow. I think, again, coming back to our hostel life, you know, everyone will relate to, you know, getting up early in the morning, because everyone loves to be in the bed. But the hostel life, that's what, you know, the teachers are after you to ensure that you shake that laziness, you beat that slumber, and you get up at 5 o'clock and go out to the ground and jog.
Mm.
In fact, and I know you mentioned about habit and abhyasa. How can it be done? And you mentioned how Krishna says that habit. In fact, I remember when I was in the Vrindavan hostel.
Mm-hmm.
In Vrindavan, as all of us whoever has studied in Vrindavan hostel know that they are really, really, really strict about morning jogging.
Absolutely.
No one is exempted.
Mm.
And I remember when in the first year, just like it was for many students, of course, being someone who did 11th and 12th in the school here, it was not difficult for me. But you are ultra careful there. You know, you can't be late even for 5 minutes. So the first year, you know, I was always punctual, and we used to do, and there's no other go, of course. But during the examination period, you know, there is a bit of relaxation.
Okay.
You know, if somebody doesn't want to jog in the mornings in the examination period, especially only during the examination, like the day you have the exam, you know, then, you know, you can take off. But I remember, you know, I got so sort of happy doing this, you know. I used to, even on an examination day, I would get up and I would go and do three full rounds of jogging, actually.
Mm.
You know, and how this, this practice, you know, stays with you, that you are mentioning, right? You know, these things, because Swami says that, you know, if it is not cultivated in that early age, then if a wrong stroke is given, then later on to correct is very difficult. But if the right strokes are there, you know, you can always shape it again. I remember, so after finishing, you know, my college days, and, you know, you started working initially in the Bangalore hospital and all that. And, you know, at that point in time, you were so much enthusiastic to work. You know, I did not really jog. And I, this whole attention of jogging and all that slowly dwindled. And actually, I did not jog for so many years, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, one day it just came back. You know, I just thought, you know, why not? Actually, the way it happened was someone said that if you jog, you can actually sing well. I mean, this is what Swami had told once. Because what was happening is I noticed that when I'm singing, especially when the lines in the bhajans are long, I'm not able to sustain my breath.
Oh, okay.
That is what was happening. And I didn't know how to overcome that. And then one brother told me that for this you need lung power. And if you jog, then it will help to improve your lung power. And during the same time, one day Ravi Kumar sir was talking, and he mentioned that Swami himself had mentioned this to one boy who was not able to sing. Swami should start jogging. That will help. So, you know, all these things put together, that was actually the motivation.
Correct.
And I started jogging. And, you know, I felt, yeah, I'm able to do it. It's not really difficult here. I mean, I was able to do 1 kilometer, 2 kilometer. Then I thought, okay, let me join the college boys when they had that 5,000 meters. So I just joined the institute group and ran 5,000 meters. Then they had the 10,000 meters. You know, I just ran. So all I'm trying to say is, after that, it has become such a routine, actually, to do, because of, you know, what Satya Sai's system of education got instilled in so many of us. That, I mean, the way it happens, and this is what Swami is saying, the right strokes for the rock.
Yeah, what you're saying is very interesting, because in a sense, like, okay, in your case, you wanted to sing in front of Swami, so that was a very powerful incentive.
Yeah.
You know, we are always driven by incentives. What is it, what is it that I'm going to gain?
Yeah.
What am I going to get from the whole thing? So, for us, when Swami was physically here, we had this incentive that we are doing something for Him. So, obviously, we are ready to give up something else, or we are ready to give up this something else to achieve this.
Yes.
But looking at it from a purely spiritual perspective, what is the incentive to turn the mind away? It's like basically you are telling the mind has to commit suicide.
Yes.
You are trying to commit, you are telling the mind, come on, get enticed to commit suicide.
I know, and that is the reason why the challenge is so great, isn't
it? Yeah, is it enticing enough? Like the mind is saying, are you serious? No. I think you really missed out on this chocolate. Come on, let's go and get this chocolate.
Yeah.
Or you have missed out on something else. No, I'm sure I've seen all this, I've tasted all this. There's nothing more. I really want you to commit suicide. Because then, so the state of understanding is obviously beyond the mind. But it becomes very theoretical, and it becomes very, difficult for people to comprehend. So I think Swami has always given us the right royal path that first try to offer everything to me.
Yes.
And if I'm really going on sitting and talking ill about somebody else,
yes,
and I say, Swami, I offer this to you, you can imagine Swami coming and giving you one tight slap and said, hey, why are you offering this to me? So in that sense, you start purifying your thoughts, words and actions. But eventually what has to happen is, you have to disassociate with them completely. And so the that I think
yes,
very nicely Swami says,
yes,
in the previous part of this chapter, where he says, therefore from tomorrow, always keep death before the eye of the memory.
Yes.
What an amazing, he says, keep death, because that is the only inevitability.
Yes.
That's something which is, you know, you can't escape.
Yes.
That's something which has, so before that happens, and if you want to be in that right frame for liberation, the last moment of your life, keep that in mind.
Yes.
And that is the standpoint, that's the yardstick from which I think we'll have to measure everything else.
In fact, you know, as you talk about the goal of life and everything, yes, and which is actually a state where completely detached with everything, you're beyond the state of mind, everything is a bit esoteric, difficult for people to relate to, difficult for me to carry on my life thinking that my goal is moksha. You know, most of them are not able to relate to that kind of a lofty goal.
Correct.
And that's why, you know, we create all these little goals which are achievable and which we think will give us ananda. Talking about ananda, other day I was reading a book where Swami is telling, yes, I want all of you to be in ananda, but what is that ananda? That ananda that comes from detachment and service to others. But that is only the real ananda. If you think, yeah, Swami wants us to be happy, Swami doesn't want us to be happy with completely all our attachment family. I mean, all that is has its place. But what is ananda, Swami says? That ananda that comes only from detachment and service to people. Anyway, that is one thing. But what I was trying to convey is, here, Swami is saying that to make it simpler, you think of good things. At least that is doable.
Correct, correct.
You cannot think about lofty moksha, nirvana is very difficult as a goal. But, okay, I will do something good. In case, you know, somebody is angry with me, I will not retaliate. I will at least think about it positively. Okay, I will be a little more patient. Okay, I will ensure that I am less angry. So, I will just try and see, can I take these steps towards goodness? And slowly that goodness will lead to that complete shreyas and finally moksha. In fact, that is what Bhagwan emphasizes on very beautifully in the next segment, 16.5, where Bhagwan is stressing on this aspect of how to be good. Because ultimately, be good, see good, do good. This is the way to God.
Absolutely.
I think we will have to stop here. And dear listeners, please read this chapter 16 of Prema Vahini today. There are a lot of things that we discussed. And of course, some of things are a bit tangential. But we thought these are useful tidbits into this discussion. Because, you know, we are in a world where there are a lot of things happening around us. And it's good that we are alive to them. We are aware of them. And we know how to maneuver our way through this jungle of life. We have to be in this jungle, but we need to know how to carve our pathway, a safe pathway, and reach the lotus feet of Bhagwan. So please take your time out and read the chapter 16. And if you have any thoughts, questions, please feel free, as always, to write to us. We'll be happy to have your viewpoints, your questions. Please be part of this discussion. Please be part of this beautiful satsang on Prema Vahini. Thank you so much for being with us. And see you next time, same time, 8:30 p.m. on Vahini Satsang, Thursday Live. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.